Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I think it's high time the rest of us got into the big data revolution, don't you think? We've had much of the year to consider what the government can learn about us by mining our so-called metadata, seeing how and exactly who we interact with online, and drawing all kinds of conclusions about the kind of people we are. As usual, the folks at the MIT Media Lab are way ahead of us on that one. Professor Cesar Hidalgo is the head of the Macro Connections Group at the MIT Media Lab. Alongside a team of two other researchers, he has created a platform for individuals to access their own metadata. It's called Immersion, and it uses your email's metadata to create a bubble map of your connections to others. I logged onto it, and poof, there was a visual picture of the various planets of people and contacts orbiting planet John Hockenberry. It was amazing. And it showed maybe even a slightly different picture of me than I see every day in the good old mirror. Cesar says that's the idea behind Immersion.
Immersion is what we like to call a big data visualization engine. This is a tool that allows people to quickly access a specific chunk of large data sets and present it in a way that is visually and easy to understand. In the case of Immersion, this big data visualization engine was designed to look at emails. And one way to think about it is to think about the big data visualization engine that the NSA would have if they wanted to quickly learn about interaction patterns of a certain individual. So what it does is it takes your email metadata, this is the from, to, cc, and timestamp of your emails, and then presents you with a visual representation in which each person is represented as a node, and links connect individuals that are likely to be cc'd in communications in which you participate. It's a tool that allows people to quickly understand the things that someone could learn if they had access to their metadata and a good visualization engine like the one that we have created.
Well, I have to say, Cesar, it's a complete mind blower to go and check out Immersion because it tells such a story about you. I mean, you immediately see who it is that you interact with a lot, who it is you interact with very little. What you say you do is very, very different from what you actually do. And when I looked at my own map, Cesar, I have no life. Everything is clustered around this radio show and all the people that are associated with communicating to put this program on the air. It's amazing to just see.
Well, you know, for me, it's obviously a similar experience. And what's interesting is that I see in the tool how my life has changed during the last 10 years. When I was a grad student, my most important nodes and cliques were groups of friends, and now they're my students and their colleagues and co-authors. So you see that transition. Now, part of it is that I think that there's a life transition that we're witnessing there. Another thing is that obviously email is the social network that we use for work. You know, there are other social networks that we use to socialize, and a lot of times when we have close interactions with people, we tend to express those interactions either face-to-face or via the phone or other media. So email is biased towards work interactions, which for me are very interesting.
But the algorithm that you use to create this visualization engine for metadata on email, you could also use in some of these other platforms, and you'd have to sort of determine what sort of level, say, texting and chatting is and Facebook news feeds are versus email, and you'd get an even more complete but instantaneous read on what people's lives are actually all about.
When it comes to the data that you describe, I like email a lot because an email interaction is an explicit act from the individual that is sending the email. Liking something on Facebook is a very low-cost type of interaction, and friending someone on Facebook also is an interaction that happens only once, and you can collect, you know, friends on Facebook as you collect Pokemons, but that does not mean that you're interacting with the person actively. When you have a collaboration with someone at work, usually that involves a lot of email volume. So although email is not usually considered a social network, it is the oldest social network. It is a web page that when you open it, you see a page that was created by other people. But it is one that requires so much effort from their users that the interactions that we get to detect through email are actually really important interactions.
Does it encourage you to be suspicious about other people when you see this data? You could certainly track the interests and communications of a mate very, very easily.
I tend to be a very optimistic person, and I tend to usually assume that people are good and everything. So, but I do think that there's some people that definitely can start using this in ways that are more suspicious than that. You know, it's not my nature, but I hear you.
But if you can get this much information from just the relatively rudimentary algorithm that you're using, I mean, imagine what some of these government organizations that have almost unlimited capability can do, right?
Yeah, so you can get more information, but the question is, would that information be relevant? I think that 99.9% of people is not worth spying, and probably more than that. We are very, very, very private about data that is really not that important. One of the things that I like about the project was that there was a lot of people that logged into their immersion profile, and what they did is then they took a snapshot of the screen with all of the names of the people that were important, and they posted it on Twitter, and they used it as an act of expression. And they were not hiding their data, and they were not afraid of what people could learn from the data. They were curious to see what was it in that data, and they were happy to communicate it to the people that were connected to them as expressed in that data. I find that a little bit is that we are too afraid, you know, of the dark, because we don't know what can be learned from data, and we're afraid that there's a danger that we're unaware of. But I don't think that our fears are from a danger that we're really sure about what it is.
What's the most surprising thing you learned about yourself when you logged in to Immersion?
The first thing that I learned is that I was getting too distracted by exploring mostly connections that were happening on the periphery of my network, and my students, which are, you know, the core of the group that I do research with, were not as prominent as I wanted them to be. That helped me focus much more into explicitly making time to interact with them much more frequently, much more often, to create group activities, because it helped me start strategizing the way that I wanted to evolve my network. My network wasn't the network that I wanted to have, but now I had a tool that allowed me to see, well, how can I transform this network into that network and then, you know, track my progress? So I think it induced or helped catalyze a change in behavior that I was brewing.
Cesar Hidalgo is head of the Macro Connections Group at the MIT Media Lab. He headed up the Immersion team that produced this visualization engine for looking at metadata. Cesar, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks, John.